I'm Elena Landsberg-Lewis, your host of Grandmothers on the Move, the podcast that kicks old stereotypes to the curb. Come meet these creative, outrageous, authentic, adventurous, irreverent, and powerful disruptors and influencers. Grandmothers, from the living room to the courtroom, making powerful contributions in every walk of life. We know them most intimately as loving caregivers, the older women in our lives with a thousand stories about their grandchildren and pictures in their purses. In this podcast, you'll come to know even more about our grandmothers. They are galvanized, determined, and are guaranteed to get you thinking. What drives them? What are they up to? What is the potential of grandmother power, and how is it changing the world? Grandmothers are on the move. You don't want to be left behind. Hi, it's Elena. Welcome back to Grandmothers on the Move. And today I have the enormous pleasure of speaking to Ana Falú, who is an Argentinian architect, a brilliant and innovative thinker, who is also a lifelong activist and feminist, has taught at the university in Argentina, and has worked across the globe for the advancement of women's human rights. Ana, it is so delicious to have you with us today. Thank you.
Thank you very much to you, Ilana. I think this initiative you are building and working with the Grandmothers on the Move is great. It's simply great because, you know, it's making visible women that sometimes are quite omitted, that they're thought as women that already had a life and that they will be at home doing quite nothing or taking care of the grandchild. So I think it's great. Your initiative is simply fantastic.
Thank you. You know, one of the reasons, Ana, that I wanted to do this podcast was because when I was a much younger woman, I had the enormous privilege of working at UNIFEM, the United Nations Development Fund for Women. And I was 30, and my mentors and the women who were working around me as leaders were, you know, in their 50s. Now I'm in my early 50s, and the women who mentored me are in their 70s, and they're still going strong. So I know how many women in their late 60s, early 70s and onward, are still making these extraordinary contributions and tremendously important contributions because they have a lifetime of work like the work that you have done. You were also the regional director for the Andean region and for Brazil and the Southern Cone in Latin America at UN Women. For me, speaking to women like you becomes even more important because I think you have a larger trajectory, a larger vision of how things unfold.
Well, I have a larger trajectory because I'm older than you, that's only. but I think you're right. I think we are living in a very contradictory and very difficult world. I think we have a lot of advances. We really succeeded as women of the 70s and the 80s, starting our life as activists and political committed people. We wanted to transform the world, and we really did transform the world, in a sense. When we were in the Fourth World Women Conference in Beijing, we were trying to advocate governments to work on data desegregation, to achieve information on the situation of women, to achieve laws. We were claiming for the stop of violence against women. And then we had a lot of success and advances, like the CEDAW, like the Belén du Pará, like the laws, the concrete law we have. In my country, for instance, we have quota law to progress into parity in politics. We have national law against violence. We have law for the common unions of people of the same sex. I mean, we advanced enormously in these 3 decades. But, unfortunately, we have to say but, we have regressions. And I don't know if there are regressions or if those are voices that were built constantly since the 90s. And I mean all this gender ideology. I don't know if you are acquainted with that. Here in Latin America, it is very strong. how the different churches, the different religions are placing this fundamentalist thought on women's bodies and women's life. Not only women, but the diversity of the society. Yeah? And of course, fundamentalist is linked to colonialism. There is a lot to share around this.
I'm reassured very often when I speak to women who are older than I am and who have been engaged in activism for so long. You know, in the early days of naming patriarchy, naming women's right to their sexual health and reproduction, all of the issues, violence against women that had to be fought, in the early days, there was so much resistance, it wasn't even taken seriously. In my mother's time, the men in the parliament in Canada, when a woman stood up to talk about domestic violence, they laughed. And yeah, that would be inconceivable today. So I often take reassurance when I come to women like you and I ask the impossible question. We've come so far, and as you say, there is still built into the systems of dominance and power so much that still has to be undone and rebuilt. Do you see a way forward, Anna?
Well, I am an optimist, Ilana, and I don't know if that is good. I am an optimist. Of course, I am, as Gramsci said, I am pessimist with my intellect.
Yes, perfect.
Because I am an optimist in what I'm doing, in what I see in the majority of the people, I would say. But then when I analyze with my intellectual capacities this world in which we are standing today, a world of such hostile, uneven societies, obscene, I would say, obscene gaps between rich and poor. I don't know. I feel that probably some of the world's thinkings about the future, maybe they could come and be true. And that is frightening, yeah? Because we are seeing that there is a world in which migrants and refugees and the democracy of Europe is weakening. I mean, that dream of the welfare state, that dream of the Europe after the Second World War, in deepening democracy of a socialist thinking. But you didn't need to be from the left thinking politically. The society was embedded of a wish of more democracy in general. And today we are seeing a society in Europe that is on the contrary. And I take Europe because Europe was our light to follow. We wanted to be politically in the same line of those welfare states that was respecting human beings. But nowadays, I mean, when you have countries that close frontiers, that do not have any consideration on the situation of the people, that are so racist, so indifferent of the suffering of the people. And at the same time, those societies are richer than ever and is concentrated each time in fewer hands. So that's one side, and that is talking about inequality, Ilana. Mm-hmm. Inequality should be at the center. We have to talk about inequality because as a feminist, I am knowing that in that inequality, women are the most unequal. Women are the most poor among the poor. Women are in the worst situation. And at the same time, at least in Latin America, and I think in the world, we have more than one third of households that are only under the unique responsibility of women. So we need to talk about them, yeah, because we are not all the same. Right. We learned that already a long time ago. Yeah. We are cross-cut by differences that are not only economic differences. Yeah. Colonialism is really something you can experience in Latin America every day with all the ethnic and the racial discrimination. So if we talk about the inequality, mm-hmm, we have to talk about women, about ethnicity, about the color of the skin, about the places where those women live, the conditions of their everyday life. So I will say, coming back to your question, that I am very optimistic when I see the young women in the streets of my country and of the world, when I see no one less. This movement that is taking the cities all over the country, millions of young women and also men, young men. Of course, in a low percentage, but there are no one more women killed. And that is fantastic. Then you gain again forces and beliefs. Or when you see what we call the green wave, all the young women's millions in front of our National Congress claiming for the law of abortion.
Yeah, that's so extraordinary. Yeah. That's something I'd love to talk about, because there's been this upsurge of young women taking to the streets, protesting, demanding, and claiming their rights. You have young women who are stepping into activism, have an analysis. They articulate an intersectional analysis. They're looking at class and race and colonialism and all of the intersections that affect women's realities. And at the same time, Anna, one of the things that I've been struggling with is that when I go into these spaces, the voices of older women activists, the expertise and the life experience and analysis, the vision, as you say, over a trajectory, are not given the same space. And I find that we're losing something because of the lack of an intergenerational solidarity and intergenerational awareness and listening to one another. And it's not to blame anyone. It's not to say that the young women are doing something wrong. I think it's so important not to lose the women who have been at the forefront, at the front lines of the struggle for women's equality. I wonder how you feel about that.
And I think it's a very interesting question, and we are discussing on that. Yeah, I am an activist that belongs to some networks in the region, and we are part of the Articulación Feminista Mercosur, a feminist articulation that wants to have a political incidence with our positions regarding feminists. And intergeneration is one of our topics. But we are thinking it from both sides, not only from the young, new generation. They are the real voices of the resistance in the streets. They are fantastic. Ilana, I have to say to you that when I go to the demonstrations, I truly and really cry of emotion, because we were 30, 50 claiming for the law of abortion, right, claiming for the stop of violence. And now there are millions. Now the 8th of March, I was there in the street. Millions of women. Fantastic. So I think we need to bridge. We need to bridge also from our side. We need to have more young people in our institutions, in our networks. We have to listen to them also, because they are teaching us other methods, other new forms of connection. And they are also raising new issues that sometimes we have, well, maybe some resistance, because we are thinking still in women at the center of our agenda. And they are much more taking other issues, you know, more broadly. They are questioning their sexuality. I think they have a lot to teach us. But at the same time, I think you are right in your question that sometimes we are unheard. I work with a lot of young women, yeah? Sometimes I say to them, you are not listening to me, exactly that. You should trust me more in what I'm saying and hear more. And you know what I think? I think that this is the only way we achieve progress in the world, with these voices and this resistance and this capacity of the young people that we had to think they have a new power and they know what they want. Right. And they know better than us. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying always to the people of my age, my friends, let's make memory. Please, let's go back in memory and try to see us, ourselves, when we were 20, 25. We were that same force,
right?
That same belief that we had the truth, we knew what to do, that the old people were fantastic, but till a point. There was a point in which we questioned them, because I had a father and a mother that were like your mother. I mean, very political and very committed. Right. They opened me the world. But in a moment, in a certain moment, I was questioned. I had always a strong respect for them. But there was always a moment in which I questioned them. So I think we need to make memory. I think we need to really bridge this intergeneration trajectories. But they need to hear more us, but we need to hear them more also. This is what I really think. And I think they are doing wonderful.
Yeah. How did you move from growing up in a political family to architecture to having to live in exile in a country where there was a junta and unbelievable repression, and then returning and then working for women's rights? And I'm not even doing justice to all that you've done. But when you look back on how you arrived at certain moments that shaped your life, how do you think about those moments?
I think, Ilana, well, maybe I will go back to my reflections in my therapy.
Perfect.
Because sometimes we don't think much about our lives, yeah? We just go ahead. Why I entered into politics since very young, even in high school, because I had a family that was politically involved,
right.
From both sides, my father and my mother. And even when in that generation, women were less involved than men, we have to remember that my mother was one of the first women to vote, because women of her generation didn't have the right to vote. And sometimes we forget those vectors that were affecting those lives. But even with those differences, they were very powerful women, very political and participating and having opinion. So I think that's why I went into politics. In my family, to think on politics or to study were like mandates that we didn't even think on. We had to be involved in the society. We had to study. I mean, those were not questions to be raised, yeah? And then, of course, we live in a very difficult generation, a very fantastic on one hand, because our generation, the generation of the 70s at the university, in the political life, in the dream of transformation, in the belief of the revolution as the possibility of transformation of the humanity. That was a privilege. I built my being in that decade. I defined this solidarity, this intersection of issues in the 70s, when one of the little boys, a child, because Jose had at that moment 9, 10 years, he went to the school of architecture when I was starting to study to clean shoes. And we developed a strong relationship. He always came to me and I was always trying to help him. And I think the life of Jose also was something very strong for me, because I disagree absolutely with a world that didn't give opportunities to little boys like him. And I think this sense of injustice that I learned from my house and my family, that I consolidate in those years of the 70s with my political militance and commitment, define my life. So when I had to run from my country, because we ran from one day to the other, I had to leave my kids with my father and my mother. And that was something I still cannot talk about, because I cry. I cry again and again, that suffering of leaving my two little boys with my parents and having to cross the frontier and all the fear that something could happen to us. And still today, Ilana, when the mothers and the grandmothers of Argentina find one of the kidnapped children, I cry, literally cry, Ilana.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that is part of my life, because my kids could be one of those kids.
Yeah.
So we, in my generation, in Latin America, in Argentina, we had those strong experiences in life. And I had one of my brothers killed by the militaries. And he was one of the young boys killed during the military coup in Argentina. So I think those strong experiences and decisions in our life gave us this energy, because sometimes I think I'm living for me and others. Because people is always saying to me, oh, you have so much energy. And I don't perceive that. I just live. I just do what I think I have to do. So, well, I don't know if this answers your question, because it's a very complex question and it's a very complex response, I think.
There's so much that is painful reflection in what you went through and what the country went through and what families went through. But it's also something that's endemic, I think, to women's lives and women activists in particular. Is there's a lot of trauma that women activists carry.
Exactly.
And I don't think it's just older women. I think that trauma is a huge part of what informs our movements in all their diversity. And it's an enormous amount to carry. It can be a personal burden and a personal energizer, and also a collective one as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely, Lana. That is something feminists gave me. I've been always solidarity with women. We had our own ways to link, you know, when we were militants and activists during the 70s. But when I had to go outside my country as an exile, I think feminists gave a sense to my life in the political dimension, and in the personal dimension, and in the collective dimension. Because when we were outside the country, I mean, you know how are the Latin families, yeah? I was living in a province, in a city, intermediate city, with a very huge family, with extraordinary support. And when I had to go outside with my two kids and my husband, the father of my kids at that moment, we didn't have anybody, and we didn't have not only the money, but the support, the loving support. And that was something that for us women, exile, was different from men. So that was, I think, a moment in which we started to put into words the rights of women and the feminists, and claiming for our rights to study, to work, to do things, and not to be all the day taking care of the kids. Because our men, our young, fantastic, committed men, lay down into bed, not crying at all, but to internally cry their loss. So I think that period is the period when I was 25. I went outside my country. I was so young. I already had my two kids, and we went outside. So I started to make more conscious the situation of women. And the feminists gave me exactly that collective sense that I was not isolated, but I was living the same problems other women were living. And also the feminists gave me a political dimension of activity that gave me a hope of transformation. While men were feeling defeated, depressed, and we are learning to make politics in another scope, with other objectives that gave us a sense of this is what we need to transform. Well, I dedicated my life. Fortunately, because nothing gave me more gratifications than my feminist activism. In meeting the most marvelous people, in meeting the most wise women, in knowing the most suffering stories, and the capacity to overcome the shame and to tell the sufferings among us, and also all the gains we had, and all what we have to do still.
Yeah. One of the things I learned very young from my mother, because she was a journalist, she was interviewing women all the time. And her job, aside from a feminist analysis or a feminist political lens on the issues of the day, her job was also to amplify the voices and lived realities of women. And so often they were extraordinarily painful and difficult. But I also saw that those voices were part of a movement. They weren't speaking into the wind. They weren't silent anymore. They weren't isolated.
Exactly.
For me, this is part of what has been so important in the work that all of us of different generations, different parts of the world, different iterations of feminism, making it richer as the years go on and full. fuller and more inclusive. This is one of the things that for me has been one of the most important dynamics, giving voice to women, not who don't have a voice. They have a voice, but who are not heard, who don't have that space. And for women at the grassroots, you know, who are really at the front lines of the struggles of patriarchy, equality, life and death, and how women live and manage. I think very often there's a dynamic tension. I'd love to hear what you think about this. I think about it almost obsessively. There's a dynamic tension that exists between the women who are the ones who have the voices or develop the voices, claim the space together, and the ones who are still in the situation where they're often doing the work, living their lives, and we don't hear from them as much. And the activists that I met and learned from at UNIFEM who had the deepest impression on me were the ones who were able to keep both realities very much alive and present, who were also negotiating with governments, lobbying for change, talking about policy, working at the UN, but at the same time, deeply, deeply connected, aware of, and respectful of women at the grassroots, women at the community level. Tell me how you did that, because you really did that.
Ilana, I can tell you some examples, I mean, to illustrate how we think, because this is collective, it's not me. Because what you are posing as a question and as a reflection is central. And I think the work you are doing to amplify our voices is great. And I really want to thank you. And I think I have to thank you, your mother also, because we have ancestral. We are not coming from nowhere. Exactly. We are coming from the women that are behind us, as the young people today are having us behind. Yeah, that's why the intergeneration is so important. But I think you are placing in this talk now an issue that is very important. Two issues, I will say. One thing is how the voices of the most poor, those that are at the front line every day in their life, are being heard. And I have to say to you that painfully, very painfully, I think that UN Women is not the same that we used to do in supporting those groups and those voices of the grassroots women. I think that today, unfortunately, UN Women is more related to government. And that is not always guaranteeing that those governments will really do that bridge with the women at the community or the women at the neighborhood. And I'll give you an example of what we are doing today here in Cordoba, in Argentina, through the organization I'm working with and with the feminists at the local level, not only at the NGO level, but also with the university. And we are trying to do a virtuous relationship. For instance, we have built in these four last years, let's call it a seminar, a workshop, a moment of reflection that we call the Right to the City, and we name it as the workshop on the territorial injustice. We build a process, and this is the key thing. How to build processes in which the grassroots community organization groups, they always have an organization. They are of different quality of institutionality, but they have organizations around their problems, the water, the violence, the childcare, whatever. So we accompany those processes, very respectful, learning from them also, and trying to transfer other experiences and to transfer some of our learning. At the same time, we work, and we are at the university, in which, of course, the time is other, because the timing of the organizations of the community is always for yesterday. The needs are urgencies. At the university, you have the time for thinking and reflection. So we are trying to put together the reflection at the academic level, the reflection and the demands and the way they are proceeding at the community level, and the NGOs in this role of linking the technical and the conceptual and the needs and the demands, and to try to lobby to the governments, to lobby to the society. And we are building an agenda together. So there are ways to work all together. There are ways, and we the feminists are building this bridge. We the feminists are building these methodologies of listening one to the other, of learning from one to the other, and to put, as I said at the beginning, at the center of the agenda, the inequality and the women that are suffering more those inequality. Those women, as you call, that are in the front line of the demand.
You know, we look at other movements and there are years and years of work, and feminism is relatively young still, yeah, and still growing and developing and deepening and broadening. And I also believe deeply that women who are feminists have the capacity to build those new ways of listening and learning and being accountable to one another.
Yes, yes.
Being challenged as well by groups of women who feel that they are not included in the movement.
Exactly. What you are saying is exactly. I mean, we need to open these possibilities. I mean, that is a responsibility we have to give a voice to and to listen the voice of other women. It's not easy. So we need to really work on that. And we are now at 25 years from Beijing, Ilana. And we have to ask ourselves as feminists, particularly those of us that have been there, but not only in Beijing, because that is, I mean, nonsense, in the process of building the agenda, the feminist agenda for Beijing. And how was that moment? And how is now? And what are the main differences? What we achieve? And what are still social debt with women? We have a very different world. And we have very weak democracies in Latin America. And we have the fundamentalists that are there, ready for taking our advances. We need to be very aware of that.
It's true now in Europe and it's true in North America. I mean, we do see, some people see it as a backlash, but however you characterize it.
Yeah, it's a backlash.
It's alarming, but it's also a real reminder that the victories are fragile.
Exactly. And are fragile. Why? Because the powerful power, the increasing power of some churches in Latin America, we see that very clearly. They are taking decision on the politics. I mean, in Brazil, that is clear. In Argentina, it's growing. In all Latin America. And they started to build this concept of the gender ideology during the 90s in the process to Beijing. It's not new. It's more powerful today.
I'm going to switch gears a little bit because one of the things that's so interesting to me now is to see the resurgence of a class and economic analysis amongst young people. That young people are talking about democratic socialism. They're talking about the intersection of feminism and anti-racism and anti-colonialism and anti-capitalism. You know, I take heart from it because I think that the connection between these oppressive forces is something that I think we lost for a little while.
Well, Ilana, that is the main game. I mean, feminism today is linking and is cross-cutting anti-capitalism, anti-colonialism, anti-patriarchy. Jointly, all those positions are placing us in the anti-fundamentalism and in the democratic socialist project. And this is the key. Yes. And this is the fantastic adhesion of the young people, the young women, the million of young women that are screaming in the street, anti-patriarchy, anti-colonialism, anti-capitalism. I mean, the young women in the streets of Latin America are linking those claims. And those are the anti-fundamentalist position. And that's why also probably the fundamentalists of the gender ideology are so aggressive. But the forces of the resistance is taking this cross-analysis is fantastically strong. It has enormous force.
I wonder how you feel now. We were talking earlier, you have 5 grandsons. When you became a grandmother, did grandmotherhood also feel political to you?
I love that question. I'll tell you something, Ilana. When I knew I was going to be a grandmother, I was so deeply emotional because I wanted it so much. I wanted it so much because I had a little fear inside myself that it would take more time because I had boys, you know, and they were so generous and my daughters-in-law were so generous with me because I was so fascinated to have grandkids because I think that is the only eternity we have. You don't need to have grandsons to have that eternity because you can have the nephews, the son of the friends, but those are the eternity. I think that to be a grandmother is a political responsibility also. I mean, I'm always talking to my grandchild. I think we are developing a good relationship. And just as an example, when the green wave here in Argentina in the last 2-3 years, my grandson sent me a picture of him at the school with the green scarf saying, "It will be law, Grandma." And I think that was a joy I had, a gift of the life, because I thought we are building new boys, new people, new masculinities. Boys that are understanding of these issues, yeah? And at 11 years old, having this sensibility. And I think it's also a responsibility on our side, not only on their side. We have to build those relationships. And that is politics. The private is politics. We have a freedom because we don't have the responsibility of the everyday life with the kids. And we have the freedom of playing, of saying things, of complicity. It's marvelous.
It is such a powerful relationship and it holds so much possibility. And I see in women older than myself who have become grandmothers and those who haven't, there is also another kind of freedom. When I look at the older women in my life and the grandmothers in my life, they have a kind of liberation from that kind of
exactly. You know, that is wisdom.
Yes.
That is what I call wisdom.
It is.
I think life teach you that you don't have to worry that much, that people find their ways, that ways are so different. And then we take care of our grandchild and granddaughters with the most powerful instrument that is love and respect. Love and respect. And I think that is what us, the feminist grandmothers, do. I have a very good friend in Uruguay. She used to be the ministry of the women ministry. And we work a lot together. And she has a granddaughter that is adorable. And she's a rapper.
That's wonderful.
No, she's a young woman rapper. She's rapping. And she, the grandmother that was a ministry and she was a deputy and a political woman, she says she's fantastic. She's doing a great work with the rapping. And that is a feminist grandmother, but also is a political head, an open head.
Right.
And I think that is wisdom. Because you don't need to repeat the patterns of the life you had to choose the right way. I think young people is teaching us a lot. They also have more freedom than the intermediate generation. And that is a connection point.
Thank you, Anna. Thank you for everything you do. It's so important.
Thanks to you, Ilana, for your interest.
Abrazo.
Abrazo.
Thanks for listening. I'm Ilana Landsberg-Lewis, your host of Grandmothers on the Move. If you want to find out more about me or the podcast, go to grandmothersonthemove.com and come back next week for another episode.